I knew we were in different territory with Tamar Haspel's new book about growing your own food when we got to the part where she and her husband turned an old washing machine into a chicken plucker. This is real dedication. So Haspel is a James Beard winning columnist, award-winning columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the column Unearthed, which she says tackles food from every angle. Haspel moved to the Cape in 2008 and with trepidation at first set out to eat one thing she grew, foraged, or hunted for herself at every meal. Now, 14 years later, and a whole lot of mushrooms, bad-tasting greens, trucks, guns, ice fishing, chicken pluckers, and a fig tree, she has written a book. It's called To Boldly Grow, Finding Joy, Adventure, and Dinner in Your Own Backyard. Tamar Haspel is here in Studio 3. We invite you to join us. Are you trying to grow more of your own food at home? Do you have questions about foraging or raising your own livestock? Wondering how to prepare acorns for flour using a toilet? Yes, that's a thing. You can call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK or tweet us at Radio Boston. Tamar, welcome.
Tiziana, thank you for having me.
It's so great to have you. So, okay, first, now I've read the book. There's much for us to talk about. But in your whole journey, what is the craziest or most unexpected or most Rube Goldberg-ish thing you've ever done to produce your own food?
Oh, we got to go with the chicken plucker because, you know, on the plus side, we didn't burn the house down, but it was nip and tuck there. But it was just another problem to solve. We've got some chickens to pluck, and we wanted to automate the process. You spend some time on YouTube, and then you do your level best. And it's kind of weird that when you spend a lot of time doing things you've never done before, you fail. But that's part of the process. And now we have a chicken plucker that doesn't burn the house down and actually does pluck chickens. And a story to boot.
So for the burn the house down thing, the engine on the washing machine eventually caught on fire.
It did.
Right. And so for people to understand, because this was hard for me to picture until you really described it. Basically, you've got rubber grabby thingies in something that
that's
spins.
That's the technical term.
Right. And you stick you stick the chicken in there and the rubber grabby thingies grab all the feathers and pull them off.
Yes, I think that's an excellent description. Yeah, they're these rubber, and they call them chicken fingers, which caused a little confusion
right.
at the beginning of this story. But yeah, and you can either do a drum and put the chicken on the inside, or you can have a rotating cylinder and hold the chicken on the outside. So, but either way, it's the same process. The rubber grabby thingies grab the chicken feathers, and they work pretty well. And when you're doing chickens, you generally have quite a few, and it makes the process go a lot more smoothly.
So this was an interesting thing about your journey towards really producing or foraging or growing or raising more and more of your own food, that the book really moves back and forth between the control room wants to know, make sure the chicken is dead at that point. It is. And in fact, that's the thing I'm going to talk about right now. You go back and forth between the humor and the ingenuity and the trying and the failure, but also the sacredness for you of the plants, the animals, the land, you know, the respect with which you approach all of this. Talk about that a little bit.
It connects you to where food comes from, which is something I think a lot of us have moved really far away from. And I think we have a better feel of it with plants because a lot of us, you know, we grow tomatoes in the garden. But with animals, it's a little bit harder. Most of us don't keep livestock. Most of us have never killed an animal we're going to eat. And some of the most moving experiences we had were actually when we had flocks of turkeys and people would want to come down on slaughter day and participate because they felt like if they were going to eat meat, and a lot of these people wanted to opt out of the industrial food supply but felt differently about a backyard-raised bird, and they felt like if they were going to eat meat, they wanted to step up and actually do the slaughter themselves. And there were some experiences on those days that really stuck with me. And of course, the very experience of doing it myself. It was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do, but it's also commensurately satisfying. And to this day, you can ask me, you know, what's a skill you're proud of? And I work real hard to be a better writer and a better cook and even a better golfer. But what I'm proud of is that I can shoot and field dress and break down a deer because it was so far out of my comfort zone.
So I will come back to the deer because that whole piece is a really interesting story. But I'm going to back us up now, because when you started, there were two things that really stuck with me. One, the word armchair comes up a lot at the beginning, because you were kind of an armchair person.
I was.
This is not an armchair sport.
It is not.
Right. And then the other thing is that you started in a simple place that was just a little bit of growing and a little bit of foraging. In fact, really foraging that first year when you set out to say, what if I produced for myself, and I'm not sure produce is exactly the right word, one thing I eat every time. Mm-hmm. So take us back to the beginning to a less intimidating place for somebody who might want to join you in this endeavor now.
And both the key and the object lesson is to start small. And that's what we did. And I started doing this because my husband and I had left Manhattan and we moved to Cape Cod. I write about food and I wanted an interesting project. And we had already started a garden, and I was interested in the other options, and so we undertook to do this. But we did start small. It started with clamming, which here in the Boston area and on Cape Cod, you can do. It started with learning which mushrooms won't kill you. And only after we did a couple of those easier things, and it could be something as simple as starting one of those hydroponic herb gardens on your windowsill. But what draws you in is the feeling that that food that you're invested in, that you've gotten your hands dirty growing or procuring, it's different from other food. And anyone who's ever grown a tomato has this sense, or caught a trout. So I started looking around for the next thing. And of course, it snowballed. It got bigger and bigger. And, you know, before you know it, I'm getting a shotgun and a crew cut for my 45th birthday.
All right. So listen, I want to do a lightning round here of some of the simple lessons that I learned from your book that I think our listeners might like. And I'm going to start with foraging. Can I eat it? Right. In the green plant space, taste, yes? Taste
Absolutely.
Is how you tell.
Absolutely. Taste is how you tell. And most things that are good to eat also taste good. So if it tastes bitter, it might have compounds in it that are not good for you. So be careful. So you don't have to be so careful with those. But be careful with fruit.
Yes. So fruit, taste not your guide.
No, you have to know which fruits are edible and which aren't. And there are lots of books that can tell you that.
Okay. Now, mushrooms were interesting because what I'd gleaned from you is there are books that can tell you that, but good luck matching the mushroom you see to the book.
Mushrooms are a little difficult, and I understand why people are trepidatious, because like the upside is a nice soup and the downside is an excruciating death. And so you go somewhere else. But I will tell you that mushrooms are the single tastiest things you can forage, and there are a few that are easy to identify that have no deadly lookalikes that you're totally safe bringing home and experimenting with.
Name a couple of those.
Well, the best one is a hen of the wood. And if you can find one of those, any of those lobed mushrooms that look like that, they look like giant brains, are not going to kill you. But then there's also chanterelles and black trumpets in this part of the world. And we don't have morels on Cape Cod. Maybe some of you have them in the Boston area. And if you do, I'm going to give you my phone number because I would really like to come mushrooming with you in the spring.
Now, before people, though, get a little overwhelmed at the thought of even having to go mushrooming, if I remember correctly, you found the hen of the wood outside an old nightclub.
It was by a parking lot. Yeah, by a music venue on Cape Cod. And it's because my husband has bionic peripheral vision. When we lived in Cape Cod, he was a commodity trader, and he looked on the floor and he gestured and he had to know what was going on in the whole ring. And it was perfect training for mushroom hunting, because we passed that mushroom at 35 miles an hour arguing about politics. And he goes, "Did you see that?" I'm like, "No, of course I didn't see that." So we circled back, and then that tree kept on giving for a number of years.
So I want to come back to the deer now. So now we fast forward, because this was a 14-year process, and in it is a lot of experimentation about how to really do this yourself, where to save money, like on garden
right.
beds, and where you can't, like on a boat, if
right.
you're going to fish. Go ahead.
So the great thing about this endeavor is that it meets you where you are. It whatever your level of financial commitment is, whatever your schedule is, whether you have kids or you have a partner or you're solo, whether you're urban or rural, there's something you can do. And you get to pick the thing. Maybe it is just the hydroponic herb garden on the windowsill. Maybe it's one of those mushroom kits. Maybe it's a weekend mushroom hunt. But yeah, there's some things like if you want to fish, you need first fish equipment. And if you want to go after them other than from shore, you need a boat. And that's really the only part of the book where money comes in.
So I will encourage people to read the deer hunting portion. And I will tell you, I was raised in a family that hunted. I learned to hunt as a kid.
Did you really?
Yeah. So this registered with me in a different way. What really struck me in the piece I want to ask you about here was you really choosing to cross the threshold, both to learn to use a gun and to shoot a deer, which really felt, in the way you described it, categorically different. So why cross that threshold? Why not just stop short?
That's a great question. And I did stop short of the threshold until it occurred to me that part of the point of doing this was I was pushing my boundaries. I was learning new things. I was acquiring new skills. And the only reason I didn't want to go out and hunt a deer was basically because I was a sniveling weenie. And I didn't want to be a sniveling weenie. And so I stepped up and decided to do it. And it was very difficult for me. I mean, a whole lifetime of watching Wild Kingdom, I'm totally team gazelle. And here I am going out in the woods with a firearm trying to hunt down a deer. And it was a very big step for me. But as I said, it was commensurately gratifying.
Has anyone ever said to you, just only eat the fruits and vegetables and mushrooms and just don't eat the meat?
Absolutely. And there are a lot of people who are categorically opposed to killing animals to eat them. And I talk about that a little bit in the book. That's a principled stand, and I admire it, although I don't share it. But a lot of people who don't eat meat actually, sort of ironically, opt out of it for the same reason that some hunters hunt. I've had hunters tell me that they hunt deer because they want the animal they eat to have had a good life, and they don't want to get what's available in the supermarket. So, you know, hunters hunt sometimes for the same reason vegans vegan. And so there's a whole lot more human connection in the world of food than I think there is in other parts of the world right now.
So I'm looking at this dozen beautiful eggs that you brought here. They're gorgeous from your chickens. And in our last minute, what I want to ask you is, when I use the word precious, I mean dear, not sweet. What right. is the most precious aspect of having developed this approach to your life for you?
The most precious aspect is the one that surprised me the most, was that it changed me. It made me a more capable person. It made me a person who gets things done. It made me a person who spends time on the steep part of the learning curve, who isn't afraid of a new challenge. And at a time in my life where, let's face it, my powers are declining, that's a really good place to be.
And that's a really good place to end. Tamar Haspel is author of To Boldly Grow, Finding Joy, Adventure, and Dinner in Your Own Backyard. Tamar, really enjoyed the conversation and the book. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.